Lord Vader, Operation Andor is underway.
Excellent. If we release 3 episodes per week, the Lorehounds will never be able to cover every episode. The Imperial forces will crush the rebellion before it begins.
Stand by. We're picking up something on our scanners.
Echo Squadron, reporting in.
Delta Squadron, on your left.
Django Squadron, on your 6.
With Imperial forces coming in fast, we're calling all Rebels to join the fight this season. Starting after the April 22nd premiere, you'll hear 3 full breakdowns for each week's episodes of Andor Season 2. Each podcast will be led by one of our squadron leaders, Alicia, David, and John. We'll be bringing in new and familiar voices to fill out the roster. Search for the Lorehounds on any podcast platform to join us in a galaxy far, far away. And don't forget to check out our season pass for even more content like our Holocron bonus pods. It's good news for anyone, except Darth Vader. Welcome to the Sonic Screwcast, where the Lorehounds, your guides to all of Wales. I'm John.
And I'm Alicia, and this is our coverage of the BBC and Disney Plus series Doctor Who.
In this episode, we'll be discussing Season 1, Episode 5, titled 73 Yards.
And as much as we're enjoying letting you listen in on our conversations about the show, we would love to hear your thoughts as well. So please do send us an email at tardis@thelorehounds.com or visit our website at thelorehounds.com/contact. And there you can either use the contact form or leave us a voicemail, which we can drop right into the episode. And of course, we'd love for you to join our Discord server. We have a fun community. We're chatting about Doctor Who and a bunch of other shows and books and games and everything else.
Also, please consider supporting us on Supercast or Patreon for as little as $3 a month. You get ad-free episodes, show guides, much more. Subscribing is a great way to help us make more timey-wimey podcasts and afford to pay on our magic phones.
And of course, all those links are in the show notes below.
All right, Alicia, we're back with our weekly Who coverage that I bullied you into like the Welsh bullied Ruby.
Well, now I am very glad for it because I like this episode even better than Boom.
Yeah, this was really good. This was really, really good. I was watching and it felt like we were right back in like the peak RTD era.
Right, exactly. Yeah, this is, I saw someone online called it like the most Torchwoody episode. I'm like, yes. See, that's the RTD influence is why I like Torchwood so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, super good. So what were your thoughts on this episode overall? I know we're going to go right into spoilers. So if you've not watched the episode, please leave, watch it, and come back. Go 73 yards away. Sorry, go ahead.
Exactly. So, I mean, it was a bold choice to have no doctor for most of the episode, especially this new into like a new companion and a new doctor. But for me, that really worked because it just added to that the growing feeling of dread and helplessness that was building throughout the episode. It's Welsh folklore. So that's literally one of my favorite genres. and it feels like a bit of the anti It Follows also, which is one of my favorite horror movies. So
I've seen that one. I saw that one in theaters when it came out.
And what do you think of it?
I liked it a lot. I thought it was it was a lot of fun.
They Follow comes out next year. I'm very excited.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I got to make plans.
This is like the anti version of that in a way, because in that it's still the creeping dread, but there you have someone relentlessly walking the same pace to catch up to you. And here it's, you know, you can't confront what's following you because it's always 73 yards away.
Right. Right. I like that a lot. It's an interesting concept to have something always near you. Semper distans.
Right. Exactly. Have you ever watched the Davies Show Years and Years?
No.
It's a limited series, and it's one that I think about all the time. I don't know. I watched it years and years ago. No, it's not that old. Like, I don't know, 5 to 10 years old. But it's about, it follows this family in the UK through years and years, and covers all of these, like a mix of some technological points. Like there's someone who's a transhumanist, also other like immigration from a personal angle. And it's just kind of one of those shows that touches on everything with the full roller coaster of emotions. And this episode reminded me of that a lot. So I'd say anyone who liked this episode, check out Years and Years.
Okay. Sounds good. Yeah, this was, you know, making people get old to confront themselves is definitely an RTD thing. I mean, see the 10th Doctor in the specials before he left. Or was that the specials or was that his penultimate season?
I don't remember. I don't remember what happened in what episode anymore. You've watched more recently than I have.
I think it was the first Master run. It was the first, you know, Saxon Master. All right. Yeah, I mean, I thought this was a great episode. At first, I watched it and I was like, wait, that's the ending? And I was I was a little disappointed. And then the more I thought about it, I was more into it. Then on second watch, because I showed my wife this episode, who is not at all a Whovian. She is very, not like anti-Who, but certainly
no interest.
Would not choose to watch it. Yeah.
Yeah.
But I was like, you got to watch this one because she loved It Follows. I was like, it's kind of similar. Why don't you try this one? And she liked it. So this was, I don't know if it would be a good starter for anyone, but I think it was a good starter for her.
I messaged my sister too, because, you know, they watched the first episode so far, and I know why they haven't had time to catch up on stuff, but I was like, episode 5 is Welsh folk horror.
You've gotten the whole Alicia clan into Welsh folk.
Oh, well, I mean, because our interest in the Welsh side probably just comes from us. That's our mom's side of the family being Welsh.
Oh, okay.
And then, but my sister and I just, I had a love of horror. I transferred that to her. We talk about it a lot. If anyone's interested in the Wool Shift Dust breakdown of the fall of the House of Usher. But so I transferred that love of horror to her. And yeah, obviously this genre fits in with our identities as sisters.
Yeah. Cool. All right. Shall we get into the full episode?
Yes.
Here's a synopsis. The Doctor and Ruby land on the coast of Wales, where the Doctor breaks a fairy circle and disappears. An old woman begins whispering and signing something at Ruby from a distance. No matter where Ruby goes, she follows. Ruby makes her way to a local pub where she's bullied by the Welsh. She then she sees that every time somebody talks to the woman, they look at Ruby and run in fear. Ruby returns home to her mom, who tries to talk to the woman for her, but runs away in fear and disowns Ruby. Kate Lethbridge-Stewart offers her help, but her whole team abandons Ruby when they approach the woman. Ruby then sees Roger Ap Gwilym campaigning for prime minister and remembers the Doctor calling him the most dangerous prime minister in history. She volunteers for his campaign and uses the Semper Distans woman to make Gwilym run away before he can launch his recently acquired nuclear weapons. 40 years later, at the end of her life, Ruby is in a care home trying to sleep when the strange woman begins to come closer. Ruby flashes through time and finds herself as the older woman, warning the Doctor and her young self not to step. Young Ruby stops the Doctor from breaking the circle, and the Doctor avoids being taken away.
So, yeah, I thought it was very interesting that they also literally point out in this that the cliff tops are a boundary between land and sea, and then say word for word, a liminal space where rules are suspended, which reminded me a whole lot of that 60th anniversary special at the Edge of Space.
Also, I just want to like sit down and have lunch with that woman who's
Wait,
inventing
one?
Words and talking about the liminal spaces. I feel like you just say something to her and she'll come out with something genius.
Listen, the Welsh are a lyrical people. It's in the blood.
And the blood is everywhere, according to them. You know, you want, you know why we have so many castles?
Yeah, torture.
Man, They got me with the magic phone bit, I gotta say that. Like, I was like, oh, is she in like the 80s or something?
Yeah, I didn't know what year it was. So I was like, this, but I understand it's a bit insulting if it is, you know, 2024 or whatever.
Right, right. That sparked some debate in our Discord if the Welsh were too mean. I saw this comment on Reddit that made me laugh that said, a bunch of people just asking you why would you do that is very Welsh. It was a really fun pub scene, though. I really love the way that they introduce the magic with some levity. Mm-hmm. Like, they really, like, get you sucked into, and you're like, oh, this is going to be really camp and really, you know, like, explicitly magic.
Yeah.
And then when they're messing with her, I'm like, oh, that was a really good way to sort of tease the magic, but not make me take it too seriously.
Right, exactly. And we have to point out that the hiker she meets on the way is now the most explicit meeting she's had with Susan Twist. And she asks her, because now she saw her directly, you know, in the last episode as the AI in the ambulance. And now she asks her, have I met you before? So we are seeing this, whatever being Susan Twist is playing, coming more and more to the foreground. But do you think the hiker knows that she's all these different people, or do you think there's something else to play?
I don't know if it's that or if it's like a Clara situation where she's like in these different timelines.
Right. Exactly. That's what I'm wondering. If she's like split or something.
So Susan Twist is not Mrs. Flood, right?
No. So we also got Mrs. Flood, and it seemed like she only shows up for a second to nag and doesn't say anything else that intriguing. So it's just, it feels like they're just reminding us that she's there and they're seeding that for later. But it feels like the Susan Twist thing, they're putting forward more in the forefront.
Well, there was a theory for a while that Mrs. Flood was older Ruby. And I think that can be put to bed now. Because we know what Ruby looks like old.
Right. That's true. Good point.
Yeah.
Did you notice at one point they were showing a transition with Ruby playing with her ear? I haven't really noticed that before. I don't know if she's been doing that all along, but I'm going to be paying attention if there is a reason why they kind of zoomed in on that, or if that was just used for the sake of transition.
I didn't notice that, but I see what you're saying there, and that's interesting if there's something there.
Yeah.
What'd you think about the return of Kate Lethbridge-Stewart?
Yeah, it was... So we got units explained for the newbies, and that's good. But also just this escalating thing where, like, first her mom runs away, and then so like home isn't even safe. And then you see when Kate Lethbridge-Stewart shows up, we're like, oh, units here. Oh, thank God. You know, and then they all run away, too. And it's just the building dread. But I also have to shout out that it's funny that also this week, I can't help but draw parallels with what else I'm watching, but in Interview with the Vampire, they introduced a prominent similar organization there called the Talamasca.
Oh, that's funny. Yeah. That's funny. You know what's funny? Yeah. Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say, did you notice Kate Lethbridge-Stewart had red nails, which I saw side-by-side images from this episode and from the 60th anniversary when a red-nailed hand picks up a golden tooth.
Ooh. Interesting. The master might rear his ugly head again.
Yeah.
Also, can we just say, with Roger Ap Gwilym being referred to as the most dangerous prime minister in history, I'm just looking at Harold Saxon going, do I mean nothing to you?
Yeah, and I also wonder, like, first of all, just have to shout out that the actor playing him was Aneurin Barnard, who I think you watched 1899, right?
I did not.
Oh, you did not? Okay, sorry. But he was one of the main characters in there, so I had recognized him from that. I'm a fan of his. But
nice.
So I wondered if the doctor, you know, because the doctor brought him up at the beginning before he disappeared, but then that was all in this whole alternate timeline. So how did the doctor remember him in the beginning? Does he still exist after that? Could we have an overlapping time loop situation a la Dark?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know if that ever happens, that Ruby stops this guy. So maybe they'll have to stop him again later.
Interesting. Yeah.
Or maybe he was stopped a different way in the main timeline. Yeah. Who knows? We might just
especially
let this
go. An actor like that, it would be nice to use it more than once.
Yeah. It, by the way, I dropped I realize that we're trying to do this podcast for new and old Whovians. So Harold Saxon, what I refer to there, is a character that was really the master, which is this adversary of the Doctor, stemming all the way from the classic series and through New Who. And basically the master pretended to be human and became the Prime Minister of Britain and did a lot of bad stuff. Did like a whole lot of bad stuff. So that's why I'm making the joke of, do I mean nothing to you?
And also to elaborate on what I said, the master was last referred to in the 60th anniversary special when the toy maker, who we talked about with the Maestro episode, the toy maker said that he had the master in his gold tooth. And then after the toy maker was taken care of, a gold tooth was on the ground and a red fingernailed hand picked it up.
Do you think that if it was Kate, do you think that she wanted the master as like a surety against the Doctor in case the Doctor goes rogue?
I don't know. Does Kate play like that?
I don't know.
I mean, would you unleash, would Kate be the same type of person to unleash a bad guy to stop? I don't know. It could be, I mean, I could see on the one hand, she's like, well, let's just, you know, for safekeeping, let's pick this up. Mm-hmm. And then maybe later, yeah, there is something that makes her feel like she has to force her hand.
I'm calling it. We're getting a Suicide Squad spinoff. Led by Kate Lethbridge-Stewart. Yeah, by the way, I've been binging Classic Who. I finished the second Doctor's era and I'm into the third now. And Kate's dad is a cool dude. He's all over the place. I mean, especially the third Doctor. The Doctor is exiled on Earth and just gets a job at UNIT.
Yeah.
And that's just the whole thing. And I think that's what people were hoping with David Tennant being, you know, hanging out with Donna, but being a consultant for UNIT.
I mean, he could show up eventually like that, but I agree with the people who say there should be some time to let Shuti Gatwad really inhabit the role more.
Oh, I agree. Can I ask you, though, even if it's off screen, why didn't Kate reach out to 14 to help with the missing Doctor situation?
That's a good question. maybe in this version he doesn't exist, or I don't know. Or maybe she went to Ruby first and then immediately it was like, okay, step one, let's confront the woman. And then whatever the woman said, you know, it seems like whenever the woman speaks to someone, they just drop the whole thing forever.
Yeah, but also she is asked by Ruby, like, how does the world get on without the Doctor? And Kate replies, well, that's classified. Is she referring to 14 there or is she referring to something else?
Oh, yeah, that could be. Good point. That could be.
Also, somebody made a great joke on Reddit. They said, when it's how does the world get on without the Doctor, Kate turns to camera and says, for $24.99, you can get the big finish audio of me and the rest of UNIT saving the world.
I love, actually, there's been some good Doctor Who audio drama, so.
I agree. I'm currently going through the Ninth Doctor ones.
Okay. Oh, cool.
You know, they got Christopher back. They got Eccleston back.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I did hear that. I haven't listened to those. I need to go back and at least rewatch the Ninth Era because I feel like I lacked a proper appreciation that in retrospect I think is due.
Yeah, I like Nine better now than I did before. Mm-hmm. For sure. I like him better than the first Doctor, that's for sure.
Okay. Fair.
All right. What else we got here? Go ahead.
Well, I have questions about the future, first of all. This is maybe just a random world-building timeline thing. But so when Roger is saying, he says, the app in my name means that, you know, that I'm the son of Wales. It's not like the apps you used to have in your phone in the old days. And first I groaned at that. And then I was like, wait a minute. Apps are gone? There's no more apps in this world?
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's weird because it does seem like she's using something on her phone to measure distance.
Mm-hmm.
But they don't call them apps anymore.
Yeah, good question.
That seems like one of those silly science fiction things where you're just like, oh, we don't do that anymore. Yeah. But I don't think that's plausible. I think that we will still have apps. We'll just
maybe they call something else.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. I do like, though, how the Marty character was handled. That was very subtly done, where it seems like she probably experienced a sexual assault from him.
I was going to ask you about that. Like, what was the deal with her in general? And I guess that's why Ruby's apologizing to her. Like, I couldn't save you.
Right. I didn't do it soon enough, because Ruby was, as soon as he's like, oh, who's that over there? Ruby was kind of, you could tell her red flag was, you know, going up.
But so my question is, why did Ruby have to wait?
Maybe this ties in. I think it's possible we learn later what the woman was saying to the people who came up and talked to her and ran away. But maybe Ruby needed to be alone to figure it out.
But she was alone for years, for like 15 years before that, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, for a long time. I did love how, and I don't know why it continued after that, the woman there the whole time. I guess to make that connection to for her to jump back in the past. But I love an alternate timeline story, and this one I thought did it well. And I love the fact that Ruby can never directly confront what's chasing her, because it's always 73 yards away. So she can never get closer. She just has to like live with it until she, I don't know why on her deathbed she makes that jump. Did you expect the woman to be Ruby?
I kind of did think at a certain point. I was like, oh, that's old Ruby warning her. I really did. I like halfway through the episode, I was like, I think that's just her.
Yeah, I did too. But then I wondered if it could be her mom also. And then now I have like new theories brewing.
Yeah. But I don't know. Daemon Targaryen sure was harassing Ruby a lot in this episode. But yeah, I don't understand why she needed to wait. And I also don't think that I don't think that the specter of Ruby, old Ruby, was meant to get rid of Gwilym. I think that was just something that Ruby did with it.
Right. Because then otherwise, why stick around after that?
Right. I think that this was just her warning her through her whole life. You're not supposed to be in this timeline.
Right. But there's also, so she's doing sign language the whole time. So I don't speak British Sign Language, but I could tell that she was saying something about love. So I had to look it up. And apparently the official translations on ITV, they have this Doctor Who Unleashed after show. And they said the translation is, bless you. Thank you so much. That's so kind of you. When you gave me that little thing, it was just so precious. How am I ever going to repay you? But we will think of something. And then starting over from bless you, thank you so much, et cetera, et cetera.
I guess to the doctor?
But it seemed to be to Ruby, because she's signing it to Ruby the whole time.
Oh, okay.
So then I'm like, what if Ruby's her own mother? But I don't know. I just, there seems to be something. And then, so the other thing is this 73 yards thing. So I had to look up, like, what could 73, why specifically that number? And something I found really interesting is that, so when you amateur ham radio users, they apparently sign off by saying 73, and they translate that as saying that means best regards. But where it actually comes from is that the telegraphers, like, they, in the early days, they were sending messages so much they didn't want to be repetitive. So they started substituting numbers to mean different things. And they actually, in 1857, they published a code, National Telegraphic Review Operator's Guide that codified these numbers and what they mean. And 73 literally meant then, my love to you.
Huh. I like that a lot. That's cool. I wonder if that had to be intentional, right? Like 73 is so specific.
Yeah, and apparently Davies was like measuring out literally 73 yards for it seemed like an important number to him behind the scenes.
That feels obnoxious for the actors. Like, how am I going to tell?
I mean.
That just feels obnoxious. I'm so sorry, older Ruby, or whoever was the stand-in. I don't know if it was the actor older Ruby, but it was because... Oh, we just can't photograph her face. It's crazy.
Yeah. Oh, creeping dread.
Yeah. I don't love faceless things, you know. Remember the whole Slender Man thing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That was a whole thing. When I was in high school, somebody sent me like videos on that, and that freaked me out.
Yep. Well, what did you think about, they called attention to the snow again. Like when she's in this alternate timeline, she's like, I used to be able to call up snow. And like, that's nice, dotty old lady.
I know. I love that. I love that. But she's all with it too, right? Like, I think older Ruby is still very much with
yeah,
it.
Oh yeah.
Like she's like, yeah, they don't believe me. And I don't feel like putting in the effort to explain yeah. it. So whatever.
Yeah, because right before that was the thing, the lights. She's like, lights worked the same when I was a kid.
Which is kind of funny because she's the one who goes, do you take, you know, right. do you take Apple Pay?
Right. Goes to show you.
Which, honestly, I think they reacted too harshly to that. A lot of places don't take Apple Pay.
Yeah. No, I think they were just, they just decided to have some fun with this girl. Maybe they judged her the moment she walked in and she's like barely dressed with short shorts and stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think so too. Although I'll say England is very Apple Pay-y. Like yeah, the UK well, but is also, very but happy maybe that's with mobile pay.
Yeah, but that's the thing. This is Wales, and they're used to the English coming in and being like, "Oh, you think we don't have technology and we're all witches, right?"
I mean, in fairness, you got candles out. Like, what are you going to do?
It's atmospheric. Yeah.
Fair enough. I don't know. Some of those guys, like. That seemed like such a mismatch group of people. Mm-hmm. You know, you had like the punks.
Mm-hmm.
You had the older man who's like, you know, blue collar coded.
Right.
You have, you know, this old woman who's like a philosopher.
Right.
You have
small
the bartender.
Town, one place to hang out.
It's just funny. Like, that's just so many different people in one room.
Yeah. I wonder if, like the young kids, one of them could have been somebody's grandkids who are there. You know, just it's just a small town, and where do you go?
Yeah. So the Mad Jack thing, I want to talk about that too. What was that? Because, you know, you have the whole thing with Gwilym later saying, oh, well, they called me Mad Jack. But was that connected to the letters and how?
I mean, somehow it seems to be, but does this in any way, this whole affecting a permanent, barely noticeable change in reality, does it in any way tie to, for instance, what we see with the fact they use Mavity instead of gravity because of what happened in the mm-hmm. 60th special?
Right.
And if listeners who haven't watched the 60th special are starting to get the feeling they should, then yeah, go for it. Yeah.
I think it's three episodes. You can do it. Mm-hmm. I believe in you.
There's some good groundwork laid that I think is going to be coming back. Like, who
yeah, they're
Maestro's
also just a delight.
Is. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it's a good episode, this episode. I it makes me think so hard about things.
Yeah. And I think it's two cases. So, my favorite episodes are the ones that you have to think about for a little while after to make sense. But then also, I wonder how the episodes that follow the rest of the season might change our perception of this episode or answer some questions we have lingering.
Mm-hmm. And we're also building the same theme of magic through the season. You right. have Kate Lethbridge-Stewart saying things are turning more supernatural these days.
Mm-hmm.
And that's different. That's and she true. Mentions that they're wearing salt, right?
Oh, I missed that. Okay.
Yes, but when she's trying to say like, oh, the woman's not going to be able to affect us. She's like, oh, we have psychic training. Right. We're wearing salt necklaces or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's definitely like whatever the 14th Doctor did on the edge of the universe definitely messed some stuff up.
Yeah. I feel like the answer of what the woman was saying to people to get them to run away, that answer must still be coming because it's too big of a question to not address.
Yeah, I agree with that. The other thing is I really do think, and I think I mentioned this last podcast, but I think that we are building to this idea that without the Time Lords alive at all, because before they were hidden away, but they were still around.
Mm-hmm.
Without the Time Lords around, kind of guarding what you think of as the sacred timeline in MCU terms, a lot of weird stuff is coming in.
Yeah.
And yes. Magic is real again.
Right. It's all like that whole idea they keep repeating of, you know, there being a sort of demon circle and somebody smudged the salt and it's just letting stuff through. Like, yeah, that again, now from the water to the land on the liminal cliffside. Yeah, there's definitely a recurring theme. And the question is, obviously, we know the Pantheon, Maestro and Toy Master. That's something that was let through. But is everything else linked to them, or are there other entities or forces at play?
I don't know. There's also, I wonder if we're going to have any more rogue Time Lords. I mean, maybe I'm just thinking in Classic Who terms because I've been watching Classic Who and I've already met. Well, the Ronnie doesn't show up till the Seventh Doctor. But I've already met the Monk and the War Chief as far as rogue Time Lords. And I'm like, man, are we going to get the Master? Are we going to get the Monk at some point? I don't know if the Monk dies in Classic Who. But the point is, there's plenty of other rogue Time Lords around.
And does a Time Lord ever really die? How many times has the Master died?
Well, we did see zombified cyber Time Lords in the 13th Doctor's Hour. I'm still mad at Chibnall for destroying Gallifrey. I really am. I think that it was so silly to destroy it right after it came back.
Yeah, I mean, but again, with Doctor Who, that doesn't mean it stays destroyed, because maybe there's still, because wasn't Gallifrey previously in another dimension in a painting? So you can always have something crazy like that going on.
Yeah, it was like time locked twice, I think.
Right.
Which is wacky, but...
And Gallifrey being the planet that Time Lords are from, like
that. Yeah. I'm a little like, how many times can you bring it back before it becomes silly? You know.
Yeah. It was silly to just destroy it because it would be interesting to explore it.
I think they just didn't let it breathe enough. Like Chibnall did not let Gallifrey breathe enough. You just had Moffat bring it back.
Right.
And then he's like, okay, it's gone now.
Yes, I agree. Because then the new people who are, don't even know why they should feel attached to it, except for the fact that it's the Doctor's planet, of course.
Yeah. At the same time, maybe they just, you know, maybe he's on the phone with RTD and RTD's like, look, the first time it really helped to not have to explain all the Gallifrey and alien stuff.
Yeah.
So if you could just take care of Gallifrey for me so that I can onboard new people when we reset with Disney, that would be great.
I mean, but it's not like that difficult to explain. The Doctor can just say, I'm from a planet called Gallifrey, and then, you know,
and they have terrible hats.
dribble out explanations of it as the episodes go on.
That's true. One other thing I want to talk about is the fear of abandonment and how that really drives this episode.
Yes. And it's like she had to embrace that fear in order to get through it and, you know, achieve her purpose to warn the Doctor, basically, not to step on the fairy circle.
Everyone's abandoned me my whole life, but I haven't been alone in 65 years.
Because she always had herself.
Right. It's almost like that classic advice, like, love yourself before you can love somebody else. But it is true, in a sense. Like, you do need to learn to sit with yourself to have a healthy outlook, I think.
Yeah. I agree.
And I do like how, as time goes on, she stops fearing the mysterious Semper Distans woman. And she starts just, like, looking at her lovingly. Like, oh, my friend's still here.
Right. Well, I can imagine. Yeah, at that point, you, for how many decades, you have this entity always there with you. It's a constant. It's a comfort.
Right. Until, of course, it gets onto your bed.
Right.
So, to me, that meant, like, it was becoming part of her, right? Like, is that what you read it as?
Well, so that is the question, is was it always Ruby, or did that change somehow with this merging? Like, was it, and could it be like could it be that Ruby's people are whatever this entity was, and maybe from another dimension, from, you know, where the Pantheon comes from, or whatever is leaking in from the outside now?
It's a good question. I also think Ruby clearly has a human anatomy, because otherwise somebody's going to catch that by the time
they would have caught it. Yeah.
Elderly. Yeah. Yeah, if she had two hearts, like I'm just watching the first time they introduced the two hearts business. Mm-hmm. With the third doctor, like he's in the hospital unconscious after his regeneration. They're like, what is going on with this body? Mm-mm. And yeah, I just think they would have noticed that, or different blood types and things like that.
Right.
But I guess not. Yeah,
we got confirmation basically last episode that she's human.
Yeah. Yeah. And the aging, I mean, I guess we didn't see her die and possibly regenerate, but also there is this theory that I agree with, that a Time Lord needs to know that they have a regeneration coming and activate it.
Okay.
To do it. Like you don't automatically do it. You have to kind of trigger it.
Okay.
Because you think of 11. 11 probably had regenerations left because of the Timeless Child business. Mm-hmm. And 11 not knowing that he had more regenerations left let him age and almost die.
Yeah. So I have a question. They haven't explained the regeneration thing to new people yet, right?
If you haven't watched the 60th, then yeah, mm-hmm. even if you did, you only had a weird regeneration.
Right. That's not the usual way it goes.
Would you like to explain it?
Well, sure. It's just basically the doctor. This is obviously behind the scenes, just a way to keep the show going when they have to recast the doctor, mm-hmm. which they do every few seasons now. But the idea is that Time Lords, they, instead of actually dying, they just regenerate into a new person. So they hold the memories of the old old forms that they had, in the most case, with some exceptions we won't get into now. But they become a new person with a new personality, a new physical appearance.
Yeah, and this really was band-aided on when William Hartnell, the first doctor, had health issues, and they still wanted the show to keep going on. So they were like, okay, the doctor now looks like Patrick Troughton.
And apparently John likes him a lot more now.
Oh, I love Patrick Troughton. I think he's like maybe one of my top three doctors now.
So him, Tennant, and Smith?
I think so. And I think Smith might be edging out
Ooh.
Tennant. The more I think about it, the more I'm like, I actually really like Smith's portrayal.
But, I think that Shuti has the, Gatwa has the, he could become my favorite. Let's see where this goes.
Yeah, I haven't seen enough of him to make a judgment call yet. Like, I like him, but I just don't mm-hmm. know where he's going to go.
But otherwise, it's Smith for me, yeah.
Yeah.
With Tennant closely thereafter.
They're both so good. And they're mm-hmm. both different flavors, right? You have the Time Lord Supreme, and you have Mr. Goofy.
I like Mr. Goofy.
Yeah. I think that Smith, and I think that Shuti is starting to do this, especially last episode in Boom. Smith is really great at capturing like the duality of the deep sadness plus, you know, laughing through life.
Right. Right. And I think, Shuti Gatwa was doing that also. I also loved that we got, so older watchers will know of a character called River Song, whose most famous quote is spoilers. So mm-hmm. this episode when he said, oops, spoilers, that felt like him remembering her.
Yeah. River's great.
Mm-hmm. I wouldn't mind having her back again. Because, you know, with the timey-wimey-ness. Yeah.
Yep. Bring her back. Doesn't matter. Guys, if you're new to Doctor Who, we can make anything happen. Like anything can happen because the rules can always change. The sonic screwdriver does anything you need it to do in that moment. So does the TARDIS. Mm-hmm. So do the timelines. Sometimes you can go to a parallel universe and it'll break everything. Sometimes you can go there and it's fine. Whatever you want. Whatever you want that the writer wants to do in that moment. As long as it's internally consistent in that episode.
Right. It's about taking these ridiculous situations to explore like fundamental human truths.
Right. And that's what I love about it. You know, mm-hmm. we have a great time. So you ready for feedback?
Yeah, let's do it.
We got a couple. Faye wrote in an essay. Would you like to start reading it?
Sure.
And before you do, I should mention, mm-hmm. you can also send feedback like Faye did.
Yes.
By writing into TARDIS@thelorehounds.com. Going to thelorehounds.com and clicking on the contact page, or tagging us on Discord and telling us, hey, I want this in the feedback.
Yes, please do. Okay, so Faye wrote, my name is Faye, she, her. I've listened to the Lorehounds podcast since the first podcast on the Rings of Power. So yay, another original. And I'm really excited. Huzzah. And I'm really excited that Alicia's joined as a regular Lorehounds podcast. Welcome. Thank you, Faye.
Yay.
This is my first time writing in. I'm not usually a big fan of RTD. I think the Space Babies episode is about the worst Doctor Who episode I've ever seen. It's not my favorite either.
Yeah.
So I'm surprised to say that my email is actually in defense of an RTD episode on Doctor Who. The episode, but not really RTD's writing style. Okay. I've seen and heard quite a bit of feedback about this episode online saying it's confusing, makes no sense, and the ending isn't satisfying because it leaves so many unanswered questions. I don't disagree, but I think that this time it actually just works within the genre that the episode seems to be using. It's pretty much agreed upon that each episode this season is taking on a distinct genre of storytelling. If so, this one is a supernatural folk fairy tale. This is one of my favorite genres, so I was already primed to like this episode, but it seems that a lot of Doctor Who fans aren't quite sure what to make of it. In this genre, there's usually quote-unquote fey magic or supernatural occurrences, which are by their nature unexplained. No one asks how the fairies steal children and put a changeling in its place, how fairies can disguise themselves as animals or other people or put curses on people such as speaking only riddles or never being able to find their livestock, etc. There isn't a question of how in these stories because it's just fairy magic and the story carries on. So yeah, just pausing here. I am also hugely into folklore, particularly Northern European folklore, which obviously is where all this fae fairy stuff comes from. And yes, I completely agree. And this is why this one of the reasons why this episode worked for me. What do you think, Jim?
I agree with that. And I understand some of the backlash to having magic in Doctor Who. At the same time, magic has absolutely always been a part of Doctor Who, whether you call it that or not, because they, like we just said, like there's no rules to this universe. There's like very loose rules of don't have bad paradoxes, but then when they need a paradox, they do it anyway. So I don't know. I think it's totally fine. And I think it's exciting to see them go into a new area because, again, this would be season 40 if you never started renumbering. Right. And a lot of ideas have already been explored. And just to go back to the same villains over and over again is boring.
Right. I agree. This is why I'm not as in love with the Daleks and Cybermen. I'm like, yeah, I get it. But Faye continues, so that's not to say that using this genre is just an excuse to write everything off as, well, it's magic. In folk stories surrounding supernatural spirits and fairies, there are often rules set up ahead of time that are important for besting the fairy spirit, such as winning a bet, dressing in a manner to trick a fairy, outsmarting the fairy in some way to break a contract, etc. But by telling the story from Ruby's perspective, RTD has kind of gotten away with using the idea of fairy magic for his folktale without setting any parameters. And since it's just a single episode of television, it pretty much works in my opinion. See, I think, I'm interjecting as Alicia again, I think that just because parameters aren't explicitly stated or maybe not yet explicitly stated doesn't mean that they're not there. Because we did get, for instance, a 73 yards parameter.
Right, right. I also got to say, I really love that we are going into like dark fairy stories because that's sort of what they were originally, right? And, you know, we had the Changeling last year. That was really cool with a dark fairy story. You have this. And I got to say, the Tinkerbell PR firm is not doing very well for fairies these days.
I'll clap. I believe in fairies. No.
Sorry. Are we going to have who played her in Hook?
Oh, was it Julia Roberts?
It was Julia Roberts. So we're going to have Julia Roberts as Tinkerbell again. I always think that, I believe in fairies, PETA.
Sure.
Bizarre. Bizarre casting.
It would be like Sydney Sweeney now.
Yes, yes. Oh my God. It's really, can I just take an aside? I love Hook. It's a great movie. But that was the weirdest casting for Tinkerbell I could possibly imagine.
It was an outside-the-box casting. I didn't mind it at the time, but if you think about it, like that's not who I would expect.
Right, right, exactly.
So Faye continues, there's plenty of lore about fairy circles specifically, although it's more common for that reference to mean a naturally occurring circle in the ground of, made of mushrooms or grass. This is what I know it to be. And the consequences for stepping in them. The consequences or curses range from being transported to the fairy realm, dying at a young age, becoming invisible. So I did wonder if he was in the fairy realm. But anyway, becoming invisible, dancing to the point of death by exhaustion, which was a real thing, actually, that happened in history, or finding it impossible to leave or be found. In this episode, it seems like the curse is tied to Ruby's own fear slash history of abandonment. Yeah, as you said, John, as the doctor is the first of many to abandon her, the question of where did the doctor go isn't really important, because the curse is just that people abandon Ruby and where they go is inconsequential. But here's my question as Alicia. Why is she cursed when he's the one who stepped in the circle?
Because she opened the thing. Notes. She deliberately, say she deliberately opened up the notes.
True. That is when he disappeared. Them. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Good point. So Faye continues, the biggest clue about this episode is what Kate directly tells Ruby and us as the audience. When faced with something inexplicable, our brain makes up rules to try to explain it. I think this is where the political story comes in. Ruby assumes that stopping Guillem is what she is supposed to do to resolve her situation, but she is really just making up the rules to the unexplained, as it ends up not having an effect at all, except perhaps changing that time loop to avoid nuclear war. Also, I have to mention that when listing her soldiers' defense methods, Kate specifically lists necklaces of silver and salt in case of witchcraft, which seems not only apt for this episode, but also for the idea that the 14th Doctor did indeed make some significant changes to reality when he sprinkled that salt in the ground at the edge of the universe. Yeah.
Yep. You get the sense that 14, when he did that, he had a bit of a Hagrid moment. I should not have said that.
Oh, yeah. I've seen a lot of people complain that the ending doesn't make sense or at best is confusing. And I think that's kind of the point this time. It doesn't need to be explained with logic, because it's not a case of typical Doctor Who time travel. It's a case of fey magic that makes the time loop possible. It seems that there's two options at the end, but both amount to the same thing. One, the old woman actually is Ruby. See The Haunting of Hill House from 2018 for a really similar example of this idea that is really well done. I second that. That's a good show.
Yep.
Or it's just that old Ruby has some kind of influence over the woman in her dying moments. It isn't really clear, and again, doesn't really need to be made clear, but it seems that in her final moments of life, which in this genre is typically seen as a moment of transition and therefore a time when interacting with the fairy world is easier or more likely, Ruby is able to impede the curse by inserting her own message of don't step, and therefore break the fairy magic. Yeah, agreed.
Yeah, I like that a lot. I like that. Do you think that it was that she, you know, doing a good thing sort of earned her the ability to intercede?
And what was the good thing was, but this was decades after she chases him away. So
Right. But then Faye brings up a good point of like, this is a transition period.
That's what I took it to be.
Unlocks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I like your interpretation where, you know, the woman, whether it's Ruby or whatever there, that it's wasn't meant to be used to specifically chase him away, but Ruby just kind of, I like the idea of her having the agency and cleverness to think like, well, I can use this curse in this way.
I also like how she gets older by putting on glasses. That's like the way
and different
that
wigs.
She shows
different
she's older. Wigs. Yeah, different wigs.
But it worked for me. I was like, that's a bad wig, but I understand now time has passed and she's older. So Faye concludes, this kind of episode, which ends with almost no ending explanation, isn't unprecedented. See Midnight in Doctor Who. The difference here is that it's not meant to be explained as a mysterious alien life form, but as the stories of the supernatural and sometimes very creepy spirits of the Fae realm come to life in this episode. So I am frequently frustrated with RTD's propensity to skip explanations or not even attempt to address oblivious plot holes. She says, am I? Yes. But this time, RTD's style has serendipitously aligned with this episode's genre to create a creepy and interesting supernatural fairy folktale story. And it works because he specifically didn't set up any rules about how this magic works, allowing himself the freedom to do whatever he liked. If you made it to the end of this long email, thank you so much for reading. I really enjoy all the Lorehounds podcasts and look forward to your discussions and insight each week. Thank you, Faye. That was, yeah, a lot of, thank you for, you know, laying out all of that folklore background. That's a really helpful framework through which to evaluate this episode.
Yeah. Thanks, Faye, for writing in. It's nice to hear from you. Thanks for being a listener since Rings of Power. It's always great to hear that people are following us through our journey through time and space.
Mm-hmm.
Also, you brought up midnight. I just want to respond to that.
Mm-hmm.
I've heard a lot of talk about this being sort of close to midnight. I actually think this is more of a turn left. This is Donna.
Right.
You recall, if you've not watched this, this is an episode where Donna, a previous companion of the Doctor, dear listener, I know Alicia has watched it. I'm educating mm-hmm. the listener who has not watched it.
Yeah, I know.
But this is an episode where Donna, a previous companion of the Doctor, gets like attacked by a time beetle. I forgot what they called it exactly. And sent back into her timeline so that she never meets the Doctor. And then the Doctor like fails because she wasn't there to help him. And it's a whole chain of events until she can kind of save herself. And then she can go back and stop this from happening.
Yeah. I mean, I think people say, midnight because it's got that creepy vibe. But actually for me, it was most like Blink, which is also an episode that the Doctor is barely in, where the Weeping Angels, which are some of my favorite Doctor Who villains or whatever you want to call them, antagonists. Mm-hmm. That's the episode they're introduced. And it's with Carey Mulligan, of all people, young Carey Mulligan.
I know. She had a great career after that.
Yeah. But that's a classic standalone episode. And that's what this reminded me of, because I was going to call them the Creeping Angels or the Weeping Angels, but it's a similar vibe. You know, it's as soon as you're not looking at them, they get closer.
Yeah. The Weeping Angels, I love the Weeping Angels, but I'm okay to not see them for a season or two.
Right. No, I think
Chibnall really overused them.
Yeah. And yeah, it kind of took some of the creepy magic out of them for me. Mm-hmm. What was done with them in the whole Flux storyline. But that's just my issue with the Flux storyline.
Yep. All right. Marilyn Arpukila also wrote in and said, I've got a million questions about episode 5, but first and foremost, what in the world did old Ruby say to all those people to make them run away in terror, including Mad Jack himself?
Yeah. Yeah, that's an excellent question.
We just don't know. I hope we find out by the end of the season. Yeah, I think that would be a nice bit. And also Marilyn took issue with the way they represented the Welsh. She says they're far more kind and welcoming to strangers than was depicted in the show. And then there was some debate between a few members of the Discord saying like, well, she did kind of be like, do you know what a phone is?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think also, Davies he's actually, I think if I remember correctly, he's from Swansea, which is where my, family was from too. It's the second largest city in Wales.
He's basically your cousin then.
Basically, that's how it works. Yeah.
You should write to him. Get him to bring you on the show.
Exactly. I would like to be a Doctor Who villain. And then cut to me in 10 hours of makeup to become a Weeping Angel. it's a city on the southern coast, and maybe that's more like city behavior actually than small town behavior.
Fair enough. All right. Well, thanks everyone for writing in. Of course, you can get in on that. TARDIS@thelorehounds.com. For now, we're ready to wrap this thing up. So we've got a Patreon and a Supercast. You can get early and ad-free access to all our podcasts there. You can get show guides for some of the shows that we're doing, like House of the Dragon. You can get a whole bunch of stuff. It's a great time. We do second breakfast. Alicia, you just had your first second breakfast. How was it?
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. And I'm looking forward to, we're going to talk about our movie this week, too.
I know. Elevensies, a new offering.
Elevensies with Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. It was really good to rewatch that movie.
It's a great movie. Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely great. Really early 2000s in vibe. Hope you enjoy it. You can also check out our affiliates. Radioactive Ramblings is on an off week, but they'll be back with more Fallout lore next week. Rings and Rituals has a new episode coming on episode 7 of The Rings of Power, where they're going to look at it through the lens of ritual. They're doing a full rewatch of season 1 so that you can be prepped for season 2. Wool Shift Dust. Alicia, tell me about Wool Shift Dust and the Star Wars canon timeline.
So Wool Shift Dust, two things. One, for the main timeline, we're going to be recording later this week because it's a busy week for the last two episodes of season 2 of Vegan 23. So you still have time to get in feedback if you have any about those last two episodes and or anything else, of course. And for the book club, I'm releasing the long overdue Shift book breakdown. So it was a monster editing job, but it's coming out this week. And then for the Star Wars canon timeline, there's final two pre-Acolyte episodes. There's an episode that where we break down season 1 of Young Jedi Adventures, where I talk to Bob again about the lore and everything and the story, and Hjalti, my professional animator friend, also as well.
Cool.
And then the last episode is a final preview of the Acolyte with, you know, the characters and who might show up and things like that.
Nice. And then you and I will be on the Acolyte.
And then we're doing our weekly breakdowns. Yeah.
Is it next week or the week? It's a week after, right?
Yeah, June. They say June 4th it comes out, but I'm guessing that's only in the US. So yeah, June 4th, 5th.
All right. Sounds good. Looking forward to that season.
Or sorry, by US, I mean the entire Americas. Because it's
North America.
But also South America, too? Same time zone.
Okay. Oh, right. I get you. All right, Properly Howard Movie Review is our last affiliate I want to talk about. They are finishing up their season on Fellinis and Fugazis with Rocky. That should be out by the time that you listen to this episode. So go check them out. Check out all our affiliates or head to our Discord server if you want to chat with us. Find everything in the link tree in the show notes below. We've got to do our thank yous. Alicia? You're on.
Okay. So thank you first to our Discord server boosters who, especially, you know, Bob and I have been having to record through Discord because of a technical issue. So the boosting really helps us to be able to make better recordings. So thank you so much to Gnarls, Aaron K., Tiller the Thriller, Dork of Ninjas, Duve 71, Captain Gingy 56, and then our lore masters who make all this possible. Samartian, Michael G., Michelle E., David W., Brian P., Nick W., SC, Peter OH, Bettina W., Adam S., Nancy M., Duve 71, Brian 8063, Frederick H., Sarah L., Gareth C., Eric F., Matthew M., Sarah M., DJ Miwa, Andre B., Kwang Yu, Jedi Bob, Nathan T., Alex V., Aaron T., Sub-Zero, Aaron K., Dali V., Mothership 61, Gnarls, or sorry,
hold on there.
I know that was a complete mispronunciation. Gnarls? And always last, Adrian.
Cool. Well, do you know what I forgot to talk about, Alicia?
What?
What we're doing on this feed.
Oh, yes.
On the Lorehounds feed. Because now this is also on the Doctor Who Sonic Screwcast feed.
Right. Which, with new episode art, new podcast art and everything.
Very exciting. And Aaron Kay, if you know him from the Discord, and the host of Radioactive Ramblings, did the art. And it's looking great.
And you can see the preview of my smug derpy cat avatar in the art.
I know. We got to get that finished up. So you're doing Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes?
Yes. So, yes, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is also coming out in the next couple of days. Yeah.
Cool.
So it's not just Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Actually, the first half is David and I talking about the original series. And then I'm joined by another guest to talk about the new films.
That's very cool. Mm-hmm. I'm liking it. We are also, of course, doing Doctor Who weekly. We're doing The Acolyte coming up weekly. We're doing House of the Dragon. Right now, we're finishing up our rewatch, doing the last two episodes this week. And then we will be doing a podcast with Maester Anthony from Electric Boogaloo and Properly Howard. Do you talk about our hopes and dreams for season 2? Cool. What else we got? Lorehounds Play. I literally posted it to Patreon before we started recording on Final Fantasy VII Rebirth. And we've got Elevensies coming up, which we already talked about. So thanks, busy everyone.
Week. Yeah, thank you.
We're having a great time. We'll see you next week. The Lorehounds podcast is produced and published by The Lorehounds. You can send questions and feedback and voicemails at
thelorehounds.com/contact. Get early and ad-free access to all Lorehounds podcasts at patreon.com/thelorehounds. Any opinions stated are ours personally and do not reflect the opinion of or belong to any employers or other entities. Thanks for listening.
Lord Vader, Operation Andor is underway.
Excellent. If we release 3 episodes per week, the Lorehounds will never be able to cover every episode. The Imperial forces will crush the rebellion before it begins.
Stand by. We're picking up something on our scanners.
Echo Squadron, reporting in.
Delta Squadron, on your left.
Django Squadron, on your 6.
With Imperial forces coming in fast, we're calling all Rebels to join the fight this season. Starting after the April 22nd premiere, you'll hear 3 full breakdowns for each week's episodes of Andor Season 2. Each podcast will be led by one of our squadron leaders, Alicia, David, and John. We'll be bringing in new and familiar voices to fill out the roster. Search for the Lorehounds on any podcast platform to join us in a galaxy far, far away. And don't forget to check out our season pass for even more content like our Holocron bonus pods. It's good news for anyone, except Darth Vader.